Shrutva.
After hearing of.
From the disciplic succession.
Stulam.
Gross.
Tata.
As well as.
Sukshmam.
Subtle.
Rupam.
Form.
Bhagavataha.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yatehi,
a sannyasi or devotee.
Stule,
the gross form.
Nirjitam,
conquered.
Atmanam,
the mind.
Shanahai,
gradually.
Sukshmam,
the subtle spiritual form of the Lord.
Diya,
by intelligence.
Nayet,
one should lead it to.
Iti, thus.
Translation, one who is interested in liberation, who accepts the path of liberation, and is not attracted to the path of conditional life, is called yati, or a devotee. Such a person should first control his mind by thinking of the Virata Rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, and then gradually think of the spiritual form of Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, after hearing of both forms. Thus one's mind is fixed in Samadhi. By devotional service, one can then realize the spiritual form of the Lord, which is the destination of devotees. Thus his life becomes successful. So, purport by the divine grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It is said, Mahat sevam dwaram ahur vimuktahe. If one wants to progress on the path of liberation, he should associate with Mahatmas, or liberated devotees. Because in such association, there is a full chance for hearing, describing, and chanting about the name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. On the path of bondage, one eternally undergoes the repetition of birth and death. One who desires liberation from such bondage should join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and thus take advantage of the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from devotees and also explain it to propagate Krishna Consciousness. So the next text in translations is very short. There's no purport, it's just a supplementary note at the end of the chapter. So we'll just read the next, finish up this canto today, and then we'll comment. Text 40 is Bhutvipa Varsha Sharira Drinaba Samudra Patala Dinaraka Bhagana Loka Samsta Gitam mayattava nripad bhutam mishvarasya stulam vapu sakala jivana kaya dama. My dear king, I have now described for you this planet Earth, other planetary systems, and their land, barshas, rivers, and mountains. I've also described the sky, the oceans, the lower planetary systems, the directions, the hellish planetary systems, and the stars. These constitute the Virata Rupa, the gigantic material form of the Lord, on which all living entities repose. Thus I have explained the wonderful expanse of the external body of the Lord. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 26th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Hellish Planets, completed in the Honolulu Temple of the Panchatattva, June 5th, 1975. So I'll just read a supplementary note and then go on. There is a supplementary note written by His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada in his Gaudiya Bhasha. Its translation is as follows. Learned scholars who have full knowledge of all the Vedic scriptures agree that the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are innumerable. These incarnations are classified into two divisions called Prabhava and Vaibhava. According to the scriptures, Prabhava incarnations are also classified in two divisions, those which are called eternal and those which are not vividly described. In this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapters 3 through 6, there is a description of Rishabhadeva, but there is not an expanded description of his spiritual activities. Therefore, he is considered to belong to the second group of Prabhava incarnations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 3, verse 13, it is said, Ashtame madhu devyam tu naver jata unukramha darshyan bart adhiranam sarvashrama namaskritam. Lord Vishnu appeared in the eighth incarnation as the son of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra, and his wife Meru Devi. He showed the path of perfection, the Paramahamsa stage of life, which is worshipped by all the followers of Parnashram Dharma. Rishabhadeva is the supreme personality of Godhead, and his body is spiritual. Therefore, one might ask how it is possible that he passed stool and urine. The Gaudiya Vedanta Acharya, Baladev Vijayabhushana, has replied to this question in his book known as Siddhanta Ratna. It's first portion, text 65 to 68. That means, Siddhanta Ratna means the conclusion, the jewel conclusion. Imperfect men call attention to Rishabhadev's passing stool and urine as a subject matter for the study of non-devotees who do not understand the spiritual position of a transcendental body. In this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth chapter, text 11, the illusioned and bewildered state of the materialists of this age is fully described. Elsewhere in fifth canto, in the fifth chapter, text 19, Rishabhadeva also stated, Idam sharira mama duru vivavyam. This body of mine is inconceivable for materialists. This is also confirmed by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in the ninth chapter, text 11. Avacharanti mamudam urushim tanamashritam param bhavam achananto mamabhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in this human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. The human form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely difficult to understand, and in fact, for a common man, it is inconceivable. Therefore, Rishabhadeva has directly explained that his own body belongs to the spiritual platform. This being so, Rishabhadeva did not actually pass stool and urine. Although he superficially seemed to pass stool and urine, that was also transcendental and cannot be imitated by any common man. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the stool and urine of Rishabhadeva were full of transcendental fragrance. One may imitate Rishabhadeva, but he cannot imitate him in bypassing stool that is fragrant. The activities of Rishabhadeva, therefore, do not support the claims of a certain class of men known as arhats, who sometimes advertise that they are followers of Rishabhadeva. Those, of course, the Jains. How can they be followers of Rishabhadeva while they act against the Vedic principles? Shukadeva Goswami has related that after hearing about the characteristics of Lord Rishabhadeva, the king of Konka, Vinka, and Kutaka imitated a system, initiated a system of religious principles known as Arhat. These principles were not in accord with Vedic principles, and therefore they are called Pashanda Dharma, that means atheist Dharma. The members of the Arhat community considered Rishabhadeva's activities material. However, Rishabhadeva is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is on the transcendental platform, and no one can compare to him. Rishabhadeva personally exhibited the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam in the fifth canto, sixth chapter, text 8. Divanalastadvanam alelihana sahatena lidaha. At the conclusion of Rishabhadeva's pastimes, an entire forest and the Lord's body were burned to ashes in a great forest fire. In the same way, Rishabhadeva burned people's ignorance to ashes. He exhibited the characteristics of a Paramahamsa in his instructions to his sons. The principles of the Arhat community, however, do not correspond to the teachings of Rishabhadeva. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana remarks that in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam there is another description of Rishabhadeva, but that Rishabhadeva is different from the one described in this canto and of the canto. Om Ganacha Madandasha Gananjana Shlakya Chakshura Midikam Yenetasmai Shigurveda Maha. So it's interesting in the commentary at the end of this particular chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Rishabhadeva was mentioned because Lord Rishabhadeva was executing one of the processes that helps one become detached from this material world. And that process is called Jada Yoga. Jada means like a stone. So, in other words, one acts like a dumb person so that one becomes detached from this. How does one become detached from this world? Well, people don't respect you anymore. Actually, his son, Jatabharata, in his second incarnation, did the same thing. Because if you act dumb, then people won't put any pressure on you to get married. People won't put any pressure to get a job. And, of course, some people cheat in that way. They actually want to collect government money and they act dumb. I remember hearing about people, I won't mention where, but they wanted to get something called crazy money from the government. You know what crazy money is? No, you don't. That's called SSI. And sometimes, some people are actually disabled, that's a different thing. But some people just act weird, or some people act dumb. In the 1960s and 70s, when we had the Vietnam War, some people acted crazy just so they wouldn't get drafted. Drafted means that the Army and the Navy, and actually, I don't think the Navy drafted, just the Army drafted people. So that means you were called to war, so you went in and the U.S. acted like a crazy person. And then they would send you to a psychiatrist to ascertain. And some devotees, they would go in and go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And they said, wow, what's wrong with you? And they wouldn't send them to Vietnam. Other people, of course, just went to Canada. And anyway, so this process of acting dumb is used in many respects. So, of course, Jatabharata acted in that way so his parents wouldn't force him to get married, and he could just concentrate on Krishna consciousness and he wouldn't fall into illusion. And another reason for acting dumb is because when people disrespect you, you become pretty detached from this material world. Of course, ultimately, when you get old, people will disrespect you. It's the interesting thing, you know, that you get old and then you're senile and you have a bad temper. And then people don't want you around anymore. You know, the same people who are telling you, I love you, I can't live without you, and they say, I can't live with you. So that's acting dumb involuntarily. You understand? And anyway, so dumb, crazy, whatever. Just like we have a psychiatrist with us, and I'm sure she has to see if people are just acting. Because they, you know, they can get government assistance if they're actually crazy. Isn't it? Sometimes they act like that. Because then they act crazy in the office, and then you look outside as they walk into their car, and they're just more completely normal. You ever had that experience? It's funny. So this is one of the methods that sometimes are used to become detached. However, I hate to tell you, it doesn't work. Because it's something like the detachment in the crematorium, smarshana vairagya, that there's certain circumstances that make us, let's say, temporarily detached, for lack of a better word, or, let's say, repulsed by the material world. Like I can show you something really gross, just like here, gross body, but the word gross can also indicate something really disgusting. I could just show you someone's body, you know, take you to the morgue. The morgue is where they keep everybody's body in the refrigerator. You know, they had little drawers. And the people who work in the morgue are called morticians. So anyway, so I could tell you something really disgusting, and then you think, oh, this material world is so disgusting. But then 10 seconds later, you know, some pretty girl will walk by, and you forget it all, because that's the nature of illusion. I mean, it's so apparent when you're in a hospital in an operating room, and the doctor is cutting apart some young girl's body, you know, because she has some disease or something like that. And at the same time, he's looking at the nurse who's not cut apart. His body's cut apart. And he's making eyes at her, and he makes a mistake in the operation because he's... That happens sometimes. The doctor's paying more attention to the nurse than he is to his patient. And so really being grossed out or... having a negative experience in this world does not make one detached from the material world. Like you hear about Hiranyakashipu executing all these austerities, didn't detach him from the material world. He was standing on his tiptoes for so many years of the demigods, and he was very attached to the material world. So, actually, all these material means don't help one. Even the point of practicing Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga, the word Sankhya means to count. It basically means counting the material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Also, the active senses and the perceptive senses. What I mean by that? The active senses are your legs and your arms, like that, and your perceptive senses are like the eyes and the ears and all the senses that can perceive things, you know, the sense of touch, the nadis, nadis and nose for those who don't know, oidas, nadis, ojos, pula, how do you say fingers in there?
Dedos.
Those are perceptive senses. So you can analyze, you know, Sankhya Yoga means really to analyze all these things. And say, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not this body. You know, just like sometimes we tell people when they're really sick and in pain, you're not the body. It doesn't really work. You're not the body, poo-poo. So that doesn't give you renunciation either. The only thing that really gives you renunciation from in other words, you can't do a don't. You can't really get it absolutely detached. You have to be attached to something. The only thing that really gives you renunciation is to be completely attached to Krishna's lotus feet. That's why it says, Mahat Seva Mahura Vimuktes. This is a very interesting verse that Prabhupada quotes in the first purport. And this is a verse spoken by Lord Vaishabhadev again. Mahat Seva. By serving the Mahats, that means Mahatma, as Prabhupada would sometimes say, you can't rubber stamp a Mahatma. Just like there was one Mahatma from India who was rubber stamped, I won't mention his name. He was a politician. And Prabhupada said, you know, that's not Mahatma, because Mahatma, according to Krishna, means Mahatma Nastu Mam Partha Daivim Prakriti Mashrita Vajanti Nanya Manaso Gyatva Bhutadama Abhyam. It means someone who's always engaged in Krishna's service. Mahatmanas tu mam partha, o partha. The Mahatma is actually one. Daivam prakritim ashrita. He's taken shelter of my internal potency, not the external potency. External potency means politics and all these other things like that. Mundane welfare work. Just like we see people engage in mundane welfare work, and we consider them to be Mahatmas sometimes. Daivam Prakriti Mashita. Vajantyananya Manasho. He's always engaged in bhajan, you know, in chanting my glories and glorifying me. Ananya. He has no other activity. Manasho, his mind is fixed in this way. Gyatva Bhutada Marvyam. And this way he can reach the transcendental direction, a destination. So one, if one associates with such a Mahatma, then one gets detached by, and actually serving such a Mahatma, Hat Sevam, Ahuravi Muktes, one gets detached from the material world because, first of all, he hears Krishna's pastimes, he gets guidance on how to serve the Supreme Personality God, he gets corrected if he's in Maya. I mean, so many benefits like that. He gets Krishna's blessings, he gets bhakti. I mean, there's all these different reasons why serving a Mahatma gets you to the final destination. Because Krishna is pleased. Krishna says, he who says is my devotee is not my devotee, but he who says is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So Krishna becomes pleased in the heart. He gets bhakti, the bhakti latavish from the Mahatma. He gets guidance from the Mahatma. He hears Krishna katha, which is all attractive from the Mahatma. I mean, all these benefits. You know, you can list the benefits you get from associating with the Mahatma. Isn't it? It's really nice. I mean, there's at least like 10 different pros and no cons. Well, of course, the con is your false ego gets smashed. Think of another con, that you can't enjoy the material, your material enjoyment gets spoiled. Like Prabhupada said, once one takes the Krishna consciousness, it spoils. You're always remembering, and even when you try your best to smoke your marijuana, that, you know, Krishna says, I mean, there's actually stories of devotees who like fell down and left, and they were just trying their best to forget Krishna, and all of a sudden they heard Prabhupada's voice speaking, you know, my devotee will never perish. Where's that voice coming from? It's like that. I mean, one could, it's like your material life has been poisoned once you take up Krishna consciousness. We don't tell people about that before they join the movement. It's just like, and then you just keep remembering, you know, every time you're eating bhoga, you remember, you feel guilty. Like, that's good. Guilt is good in that respect. So there's many benefits from associating with a Mahatma, if you actually find a Mahatma, especially it's by sound vibration. Sushusro, Shadadanasha, Vasudeva Katara, Ruchisha, Mahatsevya, Vipra, Punya Tirtana Shevana, that is service to actually hear. Sometimes devotees say, when are you going to do service? But service is also, hearing is also service. You know, we have to understand that. Hearing is service. Of course, it's not that one just hears all day and doesn't do anything with his body. I'm just a nectar hound. I'm just engaged in hearing. That's also another nonsense. You know, you got two nonsenses. One nonsense just serves with the external body and doesn't engage in the process of hearing and chanting. And we saw so many nonsenses, or people acting in a nonsense way, fall down because of that. You know, they neglected the sadhana process, hearing regularly from great devotees, and they just thought, serve, even if they were engaged in distributing Prabhupada's books in Sankirtan, and there was service. But, you know, that, so anyway, so both things have to go on. So there has to be that external service and also the hearing and chant. Both things have to be together. It's like Prabhupada said, ISKCON sandwich, basically. When Prabhupada is referring to the morning and evening program. Morning program is very important. And in the evening also we should hear Krishna Katha. I mean, in a small temple like this, we may not always have an organized Bhagavad Gita class tonight, but somehow or other, you know, just put on some MP3 or something like that. Listen to Krishna Katha in the evening. And hear Krishna Katha in the morning. It's like Prabhupada said, ISKCON sandwich. You know, and this sandwich is the bread is the better part than the inside. And the mundane sandwich is the bread is the thing you gotta eat just to get to the inside. Like an Oreo cookie, you know, you just like, you gotta somehow really tolerate the outside of the cookie so you could, or eat around the crust, you know, the crust. And the sandwich, actually, when I was young, the first thing I would do with the sandwich is eat the crust of the sandwich. You were just like, I'm sure many people have done that. But ISKCON sandwich means that, you know, the hearing and chanting morning and evening. And then you take rest, thinking of Krishna at night, instead of thinking of management or whatever other service you're doing. So there has to be like a regulation in one's life. At a certain time, you do something. I mean, I'd try to set an example in that way. You know, during japa period, we chant japa. It's not social life time. You know, devotees sometimes have that tendency when during japa period it's just like talk. And you know, anyway, I've trained up the devotees here. In the beginning, some of the devotees weren't trained up, so I had to, when they spoke during japa period, I had to make like, or even sometimes they would speak during japa period, and I chant so loud they couldn't hear themselves speaking. You know, they started talking, and I go, Hare Krishna! And I look at them with fire coming out of the eyes. And this way, you know, they went outside and talked for japa during the japa period. So, in other words, it has to be regulated like that, regulated hearing. So the point is both things have to be there, hearing, chanting, and some concrete service for the mission. Otherwise, it's not really complete. It's not really complete devotional service. So, anyway, Mahatseva Mahurvi Mukte. So if one associates with the great devotees like this, hearing, following, serving, sevam. Sevam means serving, actually. And hearing is also serving. Then the door, Dwaram Ahurvi Mukte. Then the door to liberation becomes open. And then the opposite, Lord Rishavade states in the same verse, is Tamo Dwaram Yoshitam Sangi Sangam. So this is an interesting thing. That the door to ignorance is also open when one basically serves the senses or becomes attached to romantic things. Sangi Sangam. What? Sangi. Sangi is feminine. So Sangi Sangam. What? Who? Sangi Sangam. Sangi. Yoshi, yeah, that's the same thing. Yoshi does the same thing. Anyway, one serves the romantic dreams, or it serves the body. And if one associates with someone who is similarly attached, then the door to ignorance becomes open. So everything is based upon association, Prabhupada said. Prabhupada gave the example, you know, you go into a liquor store and you're going to start drinking liquor. That's why you can, you know, you may go in there and just have every good intention and you just order a 7-Up in the beginning. But then after a while it's a Bloody Mary. I don't know what that is. But anyway. It's some sort of, or a martini or whatever people taking. What? Yeah, anyway. You don't have to tell me. I'm innocent. So it's a question of picking our association if you want to get out of this material world. It's a very simple, very, very simple process. Actually, there is no other way of doing that. There absolutely is no other way of doing that other than association and serving a great devotee. All these other processes, whether you're talking yoga, sankhya, or jata yoga, or even hearing about the miseries of the material world, none of them will make you detach in a permanent fashion. So our business is to serve, as Prabhupada said, the Krishna consciousness movements. So Prabhupada mentioned it two times here. He says that one who desires liberation from such bondage should join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That's also another point. In other words, we need to live with the devotees. What does it mean to join the International Society? Does it mean we just have our life membership badge? Or some people have, you know, I've joined the International Society, I have my life, we used to give out passports, life membership passports, with my picture on it. It means to live with the devotees and associate with the devotees on a regular basis. Like, I got a letter from someone the other day, they said, well, Krishna is everywhere, I can be anywhere. That's true. Krishna is everywhere. However, you don't realize it. Also, Maya is everywhere, too. It's not only that Krishna is everywhere. Krishna's illusory energy is everywhere. There's a material world. So if you want to be Krishna conscious, I mean, and that's an austerity. Prabhupada said it's an austerity to live with devotees. And why is that? For several reasons. One reason is, you know, devotees will remind us when we want to be in Maya, what, that we're, it's Maya. You know, that's a real austere, you know, sometimes you want to be in Maya, so, you know, leave me alone, you know. Leave me alone with my Maya, you know. Don't make me feel guilty. So it's easier to be in Maya without the devotees, I mean. And of course, Maya is very tricky. She comes disguised, like the Vatsasura was disguised as a calf. Or Palambasura was disguised as a cowherd boy. And like Balaram was being carried away by this Palambasura, and he said, "My, this carrier has changed." So it's like Maya, you know, Maya comes in, appears to be very Krishna conscious, and then she carries us away and says, "My, wow, she's really changed." So this happens. So we have to be, so if we're with devotees, we're always being corrected. You know, it's hard. It's really hard sometimes then to be corrected. You know, people looking at you to be in a fishbowl. Well, it's not exactly a fishbowl. A fishbowl means everyone else is looking at you. But, you know, sometimes you just want to say, chill out. Chill out, you know, leave me alone. So, but it's really helpful to devotional service to live in a society of devotees. Because we're always reminded of our purpose in life. And you can't really get away with too much nonsense. I mean, just like sometimes I'm on an airplane and, you know, I want to look at the film or something like that and I look around and say, "Any devotee?" I mean, let's be honest, true confessions. So, or, you know, I know some devotees have gotten on the airplane and I'm just thinking, I hope he's sitting like about 25 rows behind me or something like that. It's like that. You know you're a fanatic Hare Krishna when you watch the video on the airplane, but you think it's Maya to put the headphones on. So you don't put the headphones on in case you get caught watching the video, you know, just like, you know, because someone comes around and you just close your eyes. The headphones are a dead giveaway. So that's the advantage of being with devotees, you know, we're corrected like that. So anyway, so these are interesting points, true confessions. I mean, you can justify all sorts of Maya, like, you know, I was just watching the Temple of Doom, it's reminding me of Krishna consciousness. Okay.